This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple. As you all know, April is National Poetry Month, so I've decided it's time for another poetry party. Tonight you'll hear all kinds of interesting work in one form or another. The winner of the Sonoma County portion of the National Recitation Contest, Poetry Out Loud, Giovanni Espinoza, and Brooke McLaughlin, runner-up. Joyce Jenkins from Poetry Flash, recordings of Theodore Retke, the late Lucille Clifton, the poetry of Pierre Reverdy, read by poet and translator Dan Bellum. His translations appeared recently in the American Poetry Review, and more. And you know, during these poetry party shows, I like playing a little music too, either by poets performing songs or just some music with interesting lyrics, like this one by Marianne Faithfull, The Ballad of Lucy Jordan. This is Catherine Hastings. Lucille Clifton, a fine poet, writer, and educator from the Buffalo, New York area, passed away on February 13th this year. She was 73 years old. Clifton was a 2-time Pulitzer Prize finalist and received many awards over the years, including, but not limited to, the following: the Charity Randall Prize, the Jerome J. Shestack Prize from the American Poetry Review, an Emmy Award, the 1984 Coretta Scott King Award, the Shelley Memorial Award, the Lannan Literary Award, and the National Book Award. She was the second woman and the first African-American to serve as Poet Laureate of Maryland, a position she held from 1979 to 1985. In 2007, she was the first Black woman to win the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize. The $100,000 prize honors a living U.S. poet whose lifetime accomplishments warrant extraordinary recognition. Over her lifetime, Lucille Clifton published 11 poetry collections and 20 children's books. When asked once how she would like to be remembered, Clifton said, "I would like to be seen as a woman whose roots go back to Africa, who tried to honor being human. My inclination is to try to help." Here is Lucille Clifton reading What the Mirror Said.
What the Mirror Said. Listen, you a wonder. You a city of a woman. You got a geography of your own. Listen, somebody need a map to understand you. Somebody need directions to move around you. Listen, woman, you not a no-place, anonymous girl. A mister with his hands on you, he got his hands on some damn body.
This is Catherine Hastings. On February 6th of this year, the Sonoma County High School Championship of Poetry Out Loud, the national recitation contest that encourages students to learn a little something about poetry through memorization and performance, took place in Santa Rosa. The Arts Council of Sonoma County partnered with the California Arts Council, the Poetry Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts to make this event possible. 13 students from 13 different high schools in Sonoma County worked very hard to make it as far as they did that night. And although one student wasn't able to attend the competition, I'm going to read all of their names and the names of their schools anyway. They deserve it. The Sonoma County Poetry Out Loud competitors were John Henry Bussey, Annalee High School; Sierra Downey, Casa Grande High School; Giovanni Espinoza, Piner; Atziri Fonseca, Sonoma Academy; Jasmine Gudino, Elsie Allen; Nicole Karras, Cloverdale; Kaicha Johnson, Rancho Cotati High School; Brooke McLaughlin, Montgomery High School; Megan Mead, Rincon Valley Christian School; Lauren Sullivan, Maria Carrillo High School; Simone Wilson, Santa Rosa High School; Julio Damian Rodriguez, Roseland University Prep; and Nolan W. Trude, Creekside High School. Brooke McLaughlin, who came in second as runner-up, a very important position to hold in the event that the winner of this countywide competition can't attend the statewide competition in Sacramento, is a senior at Montgomery High School and is involved with both the technical and acting sides of the drama program there. Upon entering college, Brooke hopes to study business management and to continue her involvement in theater. The winner of the Sonoma County Championship is Giovanni Espinoza. Giovanni is a sophomore at Piner High School. Besides excelling in his studies there, he enjoys cross-country and track, spending quality time with his family and friends, and reciting poems in his Spanish class to sharpen his bilingual skills. In just a few moments, you'll be treated to the results of this practice. It is quite amazing. Here now are a few poems recited by these very talented students. We'll start with Brooke McLaughlin and then move on to Giovanni Espinoza. Enjoy.
This is Brooke McLaughlin, and my first poem is Becoming a Redwood by Dana Gioia. Stand in a field long enough, and the sounds start up again. The crickets. The invisible toad who claims that change is possible. And all other life, too small to name. First one, then another, until innumerable. They merge into the single voice of a summer hill. Yes, it's hard to stand still. Hour after hour, fixed as a fence post, hearing the steer snort in the dark pasture, smelling the manure, and paralyzed by the mystery of how a stone can bear to be a stone. The pain the grass endures, breaking through the earth's crust. Unimaginable, the redwoods on the far hill. Rooted for centuries, the living wood grown tall and thickened with 100,000 days of light. The old windmill creaks in perfect time to the wind shaking the miles of pasture grass. And the last farmhouse light goes off. Something moves nearby. Coyotes hunt these hills, and packs of feral dogs. But standing here at night accepts all that. We are our own pale shadow in the quarter moon, moving more slowly than the crippled stars. Part of the moonlight as the moonlight falls. Part of the grass that answers the wind. Part of the midnight's watchfulness that knows there is no silence. But when danger comes. My second poem is The Pomegranate and the Big Crowd by Alberto Rios. Ventura, because she was hungry and because she was curious, but more because she was curious, took the dare. A kiss for a pomegranate. Everyone gathered, her friends and his. Everyone watched. The boys, the girls, the pigs, and the chickens. And more. Moving to the front were the children she and Clemente would one day have. And the children of those children, too. Gathered and loud with everyone and everything else. Loud as the pigs. And fast as the chickens, though she could not see them. Still, they crowded her, and she could feel their anxious breathing. This boy Clemente, whom she would kiss. She would have kissed, even without the pomegranate, though she could not say it, and was glad of this game. He suited her, she thought. He had a strong face. He felt what she felt. She could see him look around, but not at their friends. She could see him feel the shiver of the children they would have. Their son, Margarito, and his two sisters, both of whom would become nuns if just to pray enough to take care of him. This boy, so serious, he would seem like a stranger in their arms. Serious enough by himself to make up for Clemente Ventura. And for all the laughter, they themselves would feel. This curious child, who was an old man, would never trust a doctor for anything. And his serious wife to come, Refugio, and her sisters, Matilde and Consuelo as well. All the people who would follow this kiss. So many of them. And their children, too. Everyone stood there, arms up. Everyone watching. So much noise in this moment. This quick lending of herself to his cheek. The way Ventura would later kiss all these impatient children of theirs. The kiss seemed so small, but was filled with itself. This small moment of affection she gave that boy. The quarter second that it took. There they all stood, waiting with the crowd, egging them on, hefting the pomegranate and pushing them toward each other. Clemente and Ventura, in that quarter second, lived their lives. A quarter second, not finished yet. My third poem is Dirge Without Music by Edna St. Vincent Millay. I am not resigned to the shutting away of loving hearts into the hard ground. So it is, so it will be, for it has been time out of mind. Into the darkness they go, the wise and the lovely. Crowned with lilies and with laurel they go. But I am not resigned. Lovers and thinkers, into the earth with you. Become one with the dull and indiscriminate dust. A fragment of what you felt, of what you knew. A formula, a phrase remains. But the best is lost. The answers quick and keen, the honest look, the laughter, the love. They are gone. They are gone to feed the roses, elegant and curled as the blossom. Fragrant is the blossom, I know. But I do not approve. More precious was the light in your eyes than all the roses in the world. Down, down, down into the darkness of the grave. Gently they go. The beautiful, the tender, the kind. Quietly they go. The intelligent, the witty, the brave. I know. But I do not approve, and I am not resigned.
My name is Giovanni Espinoza, and the poem I'll be reciting is Doña Josefina Counsels Doña Concepcion Before Entering Sears by Maurice Kilwain Guevara. Conchita, debemos to speak totalmente en English cuando we go to Sears, okay? ¿Por qué? Porque didn't you hear lo que pasó? It say on the 11 o'clock news anoche que two robbers was caught in Sears. And now this is the part I'm not completely segura que I got everything, porque Channel 2 tiene, tú sabes, that big fat guy that's hard to understand porque his nose sit on his lip like an elefante. Pues, the point is que the robbers, the police say, was two young men, pretty big, y one have a hairy face, and the other's calvo. That's right, he's baldy and okay, believe me, qué barbaridad, porque hairy face and Mr. Baldy goes right into the underwear department, takes all the money from the caja, the cash register. And mira, Mr. Baldy goes to this poor Italian woman that I guess would be like us, 60 or 65, who's in the section of the back support brassieres. And he makes her put a big bra over her head para que she can't see nothing and kneel like she's talking to God to save her poor life and other things horrible. Pero the point, como dije, es que there was two of them and both were speaking Spanish. Y por eso es a good thing, Conchita, so the people at Sears don't confuse us with Harry and Baldy, that we speak English only. Okay. Ready? Oh, what a nice day to be aquí in Sears, Miss Concepcion. The second poem, A Supermarket in California, by Allen Ginsberg. What thoughts I have of you tonight, Walt Whitman. For I walk down the side streets, under the trees, with the headache, self-conscious, looking at the full moon. In my hungry fatigue and shopping for images, I went into the neon fruit supermarket, dreaming of your enumerations. What peaches and what penumbras? Whole family shopping at night. Aisles full of husbands, wives in the avocados, babies in the tomatoes. And you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down by the watermelons? I saw you, Walt Whitman, childless, lonely old grubber, poking among the meats in the refrigerator and eyeing the grocery boys. I heard you asking questions of each. Who killed the pork chops? What price banana? Are you my angel? I wandered in and out of the brilliant stacks of cans following you, and followed in my imagination by the store detective. We strode down the open corridors together in our solitary, fancy-tasting artichokes, possessing every frozen delicacy and never passing the cashier. Where are we going, Walt Whitman? The doors close in an hour. Which way does your beard point tonight? I touch your book and dream of our odyssey in the supermarket and feel absurd. Will we walk all night through solitary streets? The trees add shade to shade, lights out in the houses. We'll both be lonely. Will we stroll dreaming of our lost America of love, past blue automobiles and driveways, home to our silent cottage? Ah, dear father, gray beard, lonely old courage teacher, what America did you have when Karen quit pulling his fairy and you got out on a smoking bank and stood watching the boat disappear into the black waters of Lethe? My third poem, Gitanjali 35, by Rabindranath Tagore. Where the mind is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sand of dead habit, where the mind is led forward by thee into ever-widening thought and action. Into that heaven of freedom, my father, let my country awake.
Allen Ginsberg dying. Allen Ginsberg is dying. It's in all the papers. It's on the evening news. A great poet is dying, but his voice won't die. His voice is on the land, in lower Manhattan, in his own bed. He is dying. There is nothing to do about it. He is dying the death that everyone dies. He is dying the death of the poet. He has a telephone in his hand, and he calls everyone from his bed in lower Manhattan. All around the world, late at night, the telephone is ringing. This is Alan, the voice says. Allen Ginsberg calling. How many times have they heard it? Over the long, great years. He doesn't have to say Ginsberg. All around the world, in the world of poets, there is only one Allen. I wanted to tell you, he says. He tells them what's happening, what's coming down on him. Death, the dark lover, going down on him. His voice goes by satellite over the land, over the sea of Japan, where he once stood naked, trident in hand, like a young Neptune, a young man with black beard, standing on a stone beach. It is high tide, and the seabirds cry. The waves break over him now, and the seabirds cry. On the San Francisco waterfront, there is a high wind. There are great white caps lashing the Embarcadero. Allen is on the telephone. His voice is on the waves. I am reading Greek poetry. The sea is in it. Horses weep in it. The horses of Achilles weep in it. Here by the sea in San Francisco, where the waves weep. They make a sibilant sound, a sibylline sound. Allen, they whisper, Allen.
And that, of course, was the wonderful Lawrence Ferlinghetti performing his poem, Allen Ginsberg is Dying. Before that, you heard Brooke McLaughlin and Giovanni Espinoza, the runner-up and the winner of the Sonoma County High School Competition of Poetry Out Loud. You're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. This is Catherine Hastings. Let's continue on with our poetry party. I was at another poetry party recently and learned that someone there had never heard of Cab Calloway. So here's a little Cab Calloway. This is for Mark, and it's A Chicken Is Nothing But a Bird.
Talking about chicken. Chicken's a popular word, but anywhere you go, you're bound to find a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Some people call it a fowl. That's the story I heard. But let them call it this and let them call it that. A chicken ain't nothing but a bird. You can boil it, roast it, broil it, cook it in a pan or a pie. Potatoes, rice or tomatoes, a chicken's still what you got. Boy, it was a dish for old Caesar, also King Henry III. But Columbus was smart, said you can't fool me, a chicken ain't nothing but a bird. Thank you.
This is Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM, and you tell me, what other radio station are you going to hear Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Cab Calloway all on the same show? Remember that when it comes pledge time, folks. Okay, moving right along. Up next, poet Dan Bellum reads his translations from Sun on the Ceiling by Pierre Reverdy. These are just some of the poems that appeared in the summer issue of the American Poetry Review. Here now is Dan Bellum.
The book is called Au Soleil du Plafond, which exactly describes the kind of weird cubist geometry I was talking about. It literally means something like sun on the ceiling. A strange perspective right there. He thought of these, he was writing them in the late teens, and he was very much in the middle of painters like Juan Gris from Spain, Georges Braque, the other cubists. And he conceived this idea of writing 20 different sort of little still life poems in prose, is how you say it in French, poem en prose. And Juan Gris was going to illustrate them. They had a falling out. They lost their publisher. It didn't totally happen. But Juan Gris completed 11 of the illustrations. It came out only in 1955, toward the end of Reverdy's life. It was finally published in a beautiful art edition in France. But anyway, I went ahead and translated them for their own sake, and Cousin Agathe, who's a scientist, not a poet, but loves poetry, helped me also catch things that I would have never found in the dictionary in a million years. Poems in prose from Au Soleil du Plafond, Sun on the Ceiling. And the first one has a very interesting, untranslatable pun, actually. It's about it. It's called Moulin Café, coffee mill, coffee grinder. And it uses this term, mouillé du noir, brouillé du noir, which in French means literally grinding up blackness, but it's also an idiomatic expression for brooding or worrying. Coffee mill. A few grains of powder or coffee on the tablecloth, war or repose on faces frowning together, smell mingled with evening's cries. Everyone's eyes shut, the mill grinding up blackness, our heads too grinding it. In the circle of voices, a cloud lifts, a glass at the lips to fog our thoughts. Figure. Against the wall, empty spaces. A person could slip on this turned over surface. Shadow bears weight, fingers make holes in number. One time the same as another. At the far end of the world, a person thinks of another and leaves a simple name on the marble without preface or end point, the portrait of his life, memory. He is happy, everything still to be done while waiting. The pipe. Under the dense cloud, the voice rises to the ceiling in a ring of smoke, its halo. The voice and the smoke coming out of the pipe or out of thin, burning lips. Air of song in the night. Intervals of silence and the fire going out just as sound reascends the mouth's cool streams. Musician. Shadow. Musician. Immense blue curtain dividing space. It's his name knocking at the door, an air gliding forth. Sitting in the cleft of a hill between walls, I hear signals racing faster than my eyes. Between the walls, in front of the sky, window in the middle, feet on the carpet where sparks go out, or stars, or other luminous signs. The book. The white paper leaf new grown on the fence. One climbs up and climbs down. The mountain is a book whose heroes travel the wind, the pages turn, words often fall. The sound of thunder rolls over the paving stones. That's where the accident happens. The book is done. Men climb up, one section of it under each arm. Leaning against the wall, the anxious author watches the world live and does not follow. Music paper and song. The musical stave and the instrument of words. The brief title between the right side and the corner. Lines run across the white surface, and it's the place one keeps in the house that plays music. But if the sound spills over outdoors, it's another song. A new note. Sunbeams marking lines on the coat of arms. The wall. The tree on the roof. The balcony door. The voice a little higher. Guitar. The air is all quiet, but still swollen with sound. Yesterday's song still hurling its waves into our heads, and songs to come. A tip of its wing sinks into the lampshade, its reflection caressing a silent instrument that leans at the table. Muffled notes of remembrance. Seated man. The green carpet laid out at the hearth is a trap. The man with no silhouette steps away from the blank wall. Is it the sky weighing down on the arms of the chair or a wing? The space grows dark. Walls leave their lines and cut off the horizon. After running over rooftops, after hoping to come back to the sign and falling through a hole in the ceiling, hands go out into the open air. The face grows thin and everything returns to normal, a restful scene with glints of ink and gold. Violin. Once the drawer was closed and the door was shut, hands lingered alone in space, eyes open all the while, an echo still trembling in our ears. The violin had gone quiet, but feet kept beating time under the table where we couldn't see. Borders transcended, notes lost in the air, all the threads undone beyond season, retaking their measure and their tone on the dark background of silence. Fan. A wall lined with heads and stooped shoulders, eyes on gaps in the hardwood floor, feet beating time. The same tracks, the same pair of compasses, waiting with slackened faces for the cue to begin, curtains hung too low. Someone is moving around in the next room and it is not a dance, but against the drapery, a closed-up face, and a hand gliding over the mouth, a restlessly waved fan. The lamp. The dark wind that twisted the curtains couldn't lift up the paper or put out the lamp. In a gust of fear, it seemed someone had managed to come in. Between the open door and the banging shutter, nobody. And yet, over the rattling table, a brightness stirs in this empty room. Tureen. The world of hunger, the end of the world. The tureen like a globe on the table. And from the cracked open globe with its raised lid, an odor rises. A head and white arms in a cloud. The head laughed, laughed and floated from one end of the table to the other, from aroma to hunger by a longer path, drawing up ardors from the depths of another dream. Envelope. The restarted time of refrains sets the pace. For the night, it's the circle of naked faces under the lamplight's spell. Loosened sections of the long stone embankment where darkness thickened over the sluggish river. A bird passes under the arch like a memory come late, the casual old gestures of number at the moment of departure. I write the proper noun on the other side of fate, on the back of the dark envelope, on the wing of chance. Fruit bowl. A hand reaches toward the arrangement of fruit and, like a bee, hovers over it. The circle where the fingers glide is drawn tight as a trap. Then they resume their flight, leaving at the bottom of the dish a bright red scar, a drop of blood, of honey, on the fingertips. Between light and teeth, the web of desire weaves the bowlful of lips. Fountain. The silhouette with the upside-down mouth carves a wide swath on the wall. The whole sky inside the glass that passes in front of it. The space remains blue. A bluish scar on the furniture and patches of dust. The spouting of water bores a hole in the air. Vapor strays outside the lines. The sound of the sea subsides slowly. Flower pot. The rippling of curtains behind the balcony no one leans on. Silhouettes by day, massive darkness by night, lifeless dramas framed by the window. Then a burning sun, a burst of laughter, and in the deserted street between two sidewalks, a shower of color, a hail of petals, droplets that turn to mist and scent the air. Mask. In the bottom of the glass, the fixed gaze, the ribbon, the drop of gold, a trembling glance. Everyone has gone away. Sad carnival between winter and hearth, the warming sun. The rain falls more softly. The sea is drained of color. The harsh face becomes transparent again. Beneath its naked features, a fashionable face. Even in the mirror, against the folding partition, my disordered memory. Bottle. The bottle in the middle of the fire, at arm's length or on the table. In the shape of hands, in the source of pockets, there is silver and gold, there's a spirit up the sleeve. When color runs freely, when air is tangled in branches, the heart goes farther than the eyes. Flame is reborn from ash. Between the flowing thread and the stroke of light, words stop making sense. No more need of words to make ourselves understood. Pendulum. In the warm air on the ceiling, the footlights of dreams switch on. The blank walls swell up. The troubled breast gasps out muddled words. The south wind spins inside the mirror, packed with feathers and leaves. The window is blocked. The heart is almost snuffed out amongst the moon's cold ashes. Hands without a place to rest. All the trees asleep for the night. In the desert wind, the clock hands point straight down, and my time is up.
That was San Francisco poet Dan Bellum reading just some of his translations of the French poet Pierre Reverdy. If you are not aware of the name Joyce Jenkins, you should be very aware of it. Joyce Jenkins wears many, many hats for the poetry world in California. She is the executive director, co-editor, along with Richard Silberg, and publisher of Poetry Flash, which is a print magazine and a website. You can go to the website at poetryflash.org. This site receives some 17,000 hits a month. It's a busy place. Poetry Flash publishes reviews, poems, interviews, essays, as well as trade submission and award information for all creative writers of both poetry and fiction. It also carries the most comprehensive listing of literary events in the West. Their calendar is an indispensable guide to the literary scene in all of California, as well as in the Southwest and the Pacific Northwest. Joyce Jenkins is also producer and one of the sponsors of the Northern California Book Reviewers and sponsor of the Northern California Book Awards, which were held this year on April 18th. And to find out who the winners are this year, go to poetryflash.org. I had a very nice visit with Joyce Jenkins recently, and we talked about all things Poetry Flash. I will be airing pieces of that conversation on future shows of Word Temple, but this is a poetry party. So tonight I'm going to feature Joyce Jenkins as the poet she is. So right now, here are some poems read by Joyce Jenkins.
This is a poem about taking my daughter to college, and it's about Berkeley. So, set in Berkeley on Telegraph Avenue. When writing about great loss, begin with a movement, not I feel. Grace Paley. I was walking down Telegraph, noticing movement, picking my way through the veil of pierced bodies, the zebra tattoo sign, the music shop display, disheveled robots made from dog food cans and old CDs, unraveled cassettes for hair, followed the flow to the Café Med, its shiny aqua mural still reflecting a haunted Greek in Pompeii, observant emigres behind the counter, café where I too have been 86th, chased for a wandering latte glass by an exiled man with wild eyes and fiercer temper, ghost image of the bookstore flower stand as Hassan the florist defended me, shouted him down, the plush dream roses opening. Walking down Telly, my hands became spontaneous language, signs I knew no context for, spoken tongues, sang like birds. There was something inside of me, the cool, cold cylinder of me, sweating out images like toxins. What I never should have seen was now tattooed forever on some part of my psyche, untouched by light, a complex aboriginal message encrypted on the back of my neck. It was a beautiful fall day with wisps of clouds so ethereal they cast no shadows, like a patient etherized on the horizon. How did you put it, Mr. Elliot? Is this why you chose Britain over Missouri? Oh, the fineness of this light, and how much the racing mind can have and may not want. My hands wanted to tell the story, though my spirit had already classified it. My father, my daughter. Now I'm in an airplane, suddenly realize the rusty iron curtain of the landscape below is really the deciduous turning of autumn, not a wave of red algae or red Utah rock blooming on the green horizon's tide. Instead, the spitting discs, these particular New England orangey browns, dip below my convictions, the receding horizon, oblivious as escaped lingerie unfurling from a pant leg, at first unseen, then pressing where it hurts. Well, I'm going to read a poem here that is actually forthcoming, or actually it's not forthcoming. It has just been published in a new anthology called The Place That Inhabits Us, the 16 Rivers Press anthology that's been released this spring, a beautiful anthology. And I was lucky enough to have this poem accepted by them for that anthology. And it's, of course, set in Berkeley again, a poem of place, and a poem also about working on Poetry Flash and continuing that work, stumbling down to the Mexican restaurant around the corner, our off-site kitchen at Poetry Flash. Piano Man. Friday night, beautiful jazz piano at Picante's. Two people in the room, three grubby skateboarders and several ticket holders waiting for their food in the next. The music, simple, yet impossibly lovely, impossibly complicated, pours out of the shiny black spinet. The piano player notices me listening. He can hear me listening. He turns his head slightly to look. I look away to avoid eye contact because the music is impossibly intimate. How can I tell him that it's okay that no one but me hears? That I will walk out and down 6th Street and he will be alone, but that he must not stop playing, that he is not alone as long as he sounds, that he means as long as he sounds, that he cannot stop playing. He must not. And here's a poem set in North Beach at Tosca's. It's for the exhibition that they had there, the auction, really, of the original scroll that Kerouac wrote On the Road on. And they had it spread out on a pool table. It was really quite something. And, of course, he locked himself in the loo to write it, because that was the only quiet place in his Beat household. At least that's what the legend holds. The scroll. Kerouac's roll of typing paper, his original road trip through American autumn, recreated as he hunched over bathroom tiles, majestic pack tossed on its back, unfurled heart at rest. 50 years later, under plexiglass at Tosca's, traced in graphite veins with a soft gray pencil, Kerouac crossed out the part about Lucien Carr marrying the African princess, 10 kids, and the part about playing the horses with his father, all crossed out. The novel we know, On the Road, begins with lost love. First thought, best thought, it's spontaneous, true prose begins, after the death of my father, or words to that effect. Loss, the real trigger. The terrible death, what he saw, what I saw, worse than what we could experience ourselves. We wish it were us, then it is, then we take it back in the pit of night. That was the mystery that Kerouac sought. A rakish Buddha with Catholic tastes. Scroll, the scroll, tracing carbon veins. Years later, he's loaded, stands at the beach. Big Sur, its amber parchment festooning his arms. Doves diving through.
And after that poem by Joyce Jenkins, what can we do but play a little Jack Kerouac himself? This is Jack Kerouac performing the song Come Rain or Shine, words by Johnny Mercer, music by the great Harold Arlen.
This is dedicated to Betty Lombard. Come rain or come shine, saw the ocean by the sea in Florida.
I'm going to love you like nobody loves you. Come rain or come shine, happy together, unhappy together, and won't it be fine?
Yeah.
Things may be clouded or dizzy. We'll find a whole lot of weather. Cause I know, oh baby, won't it, just a little bit, I'm going to love you. Happy together, unhappy together. Won't it be fine? We're in and we're out of weather. I'm gonna love you. get together. 'Cause, ooh, baby, rain.
Brightness of the day burns in my name, that the sun may enliven my identity. Splendor of the night burnishes my name, that the stars may forever identify me. I am born heir to the king of the mountain. I am born hero to the queen of the beasts. I am born brother to the nymphs of the forest. I shall wet the waters flowing west and east. Rich through my blood runs the river of gold that redeems my father's dark treasury. Rich through my blood runs the juice of the earth that enlivens my mother's alchemical tree. Brightness of the day burns in my name, that the sun may enlighten my identity. Splendor of the night burnishes my name, that the stars may forever identify me.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you've been listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. You just heard Ludar performing the poem by James Broughton, I Am Born. This is from his CD, The Broughton Songs. Before that, Jack Kerouac himself performed Come Rain or Come Shine. Many thanks to all of my guests tonight, including the high school students, Giovanni Espinoza, winner of the Sonoma County portion of the National Recitation Contest, Poetry Out Loud, and Brooke McLaughlin, runner-up, as well as Dan Bellum and Joyce Jenkins. Thanks to everyone. If you have any questions or comments about tonight's show, please contact me at khastings@wordtemple.com. And thanks for listening.